chapter 1, and let's read verse 18 through 22.
John's training me, see, so he's always telling me how to improve my taping and all that stuff, and I always mess it up somehow. Verse 18. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave him thanks. But their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal human beings and birds and animals and reptiles. Let's look at this passage closely. In verse 18, Paul says, men suppress the truth by their wickedness. And that word suppress, in Greek, it's texokonoon. And it means to actually hold back and detain intentionally. Intentional. It's an intentional suppressing. And the question is, why does Paul through the Spirit say that people suppress the truth by their wickedness intentionally? Well, where does evil come from? From the hearts. From the untrained hearts. Think about your own life. That because of your sin, you unknowingly suppress the truth of God in your life. And Paul goes on to make a very powerful argument in the following verses that we'll look at closely. So let's look. Paul, in the beginning, he says that the gospel of God. God is the God of gospel. What does gospel mean? Good news. And it's actually evangelion. Evangelion, the good newsing. So you're evangelizing, you're evangelioning. You're sharing the good news. And you have to think, Paul is writing to the church in Rome, and there's a lot of Gentiles in the church. And he's saying, listen, this is a God of grace. Not like you thought about before you were a Christian. So let's look at the God that the Gentiles worshipped in Rome. Okay? Let's look at just a couple of them. Mars, who was the Roman god of war, or Ares in the Greek terms. And Venus, the god of love. So here are the gods, the god of war and the god of love. And the god of war committed adultery with the god of love.
Pretty common among the
Roman gods. He's saying God is a God of grace. Okay. And verse 16 and 17 says, our God of righteousness is not capricious. It's not like the Romans gods who one day they like you, one day they don't. You know, the Romans sacrificed their own children to the gods because they were afraid of them. Now let's make a comparison here. So here are the pagan gods of Rome. They're more like humans, aren't they? They're greedy, they're lustful, vengeful, jealous, unpredictable, arbitrary, capricious. Sometimes they come down to earth and want to have sexual relations with humans. They were impossible to understand. So the pagans did not bother trying to figure out their gods. What they tried to do was try to placate them or avoid them. So this concept of drawing close to God, why would you want to do that? The pagan worshiper, his goal was to avoid abuse at all costs. Then you have the Jewish God. The Jewish God was abstract, yet he was a concerned God and was caring. And he did something that in the pagan world would be totally unthinkable. He did this. He imposed on himself a covenant. I will impose on myself a set of rules. Pagan gods would never do that. They do whatever they want. They're capricious. And this pagan god, this Jewish god, made a covenant with his people and said, I will bless you if you serve me. The pagan gods could care less. Did God have to do that? No. It's good news that God wants to make a covenant with you. It's great news. Because God doesn't need us. But he wants us. And he made it clear to the Jews that if you follow the rules, you would be a treasured possession. Exodus 19, verse 6. You will be a treasured possession of mine. Now let's go back to Romans 1, verse 18. Never confuse the God who is the God of grace and good news with a God who doesn't punish. Because it says here in verse 18, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godliness and wickedness. So, what does that mean? God is not impulsive and capricious like the pagan gods, but he is a God who punishes. He punishes sin. This is so important because it tells you about God's nature. God is love, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't punish wickedness. God is a God who clearly lays out his expectations. He's like a father. And he's not vengeful and rash. So if you know what God wants, you can follow him. Not like the pagan gods who you don't know. Well, is Zeus going to be mad today or not? Is Aphrodite going to let me love people or not? Am I going to be, you know, are my crops going to grow because somebody out there is mad at me? Right? So God is not unpredictable. And because God is not unpredictable, you can know how to please him. You can know how to draw close to him. The pagan gods were like gods trying to be in relationship with somebody who's an addict. You never know what you're going to get. You never know. Whereas our God is very predictable. You know what he wants. You can be in relationship with him. Verse 19 and 20. Since what may be known about God is plain to them. Plain. Because God has made it plain to them. So Paul's making an argument here. Yes.
I think it's worth bringing up Acts 17, where Paul deals not just with all these gods, but also the Epicureans and the Stoics.
We're going to touch on that. All right. That's next.
Great.
So God makes himself known to them. He says it's plain. Wait a minute. The Gentiles didn't have the Bible. How did God make it plain? Verse 20. This is how God made it plain. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. Also, God made it plain by being invisible. Wait a minute, Paul, you're confusing me here. But he says, God's invisible qualities, his eternal powers and his divine nature. What is that?
Miracles.
Okay, miracles. He certainly performed miracles.
Creation.
Creation, right? He created things.
That's what I was going to say. Like the way the earth just sustains and keeps going.
Right. So the earth keeps going. There are natural laws that keep things in place. Right? So let's look a little bit closer at this. So here's the universe.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
Yes.
And you're going, well, okay, here's the universe. Well, what about it? So let's look at the Big Bang Theory. The Big Bang Theory is, obviously, or the singularity is, that there was explosion at the beginning of the universe. And at this explosion, energy and particles were thrown all over the universe. And God, John can correct me here, and any mistake I make here since he's a scientist. And he says, because of the creation, God's divine qualities and eternal power can be clearly seen. Now, here's what scientists know. Scientists know that we can't really see most of the universe. Dark energy and dark matter. Does anybody know anything about that? Dark energy and dark matter? All right. we actually can only measure about, what, 20% of the universe, maybe less. So what is science? Science is the study of things measurable and things that can be observed. Well, we haven't figured out how to measure dark energy and dark matter, so there goes science right out the door. It's like, wait a minute, you can't measure it, you can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't taste it, you can't touch it. No instrument has been able to figure out what it is or where it is, and yet we believe in it. So Paul is making an argument, you can't see dark energy and dark matter, but you believe in it. Why? Because of what dark energy and dark matter is doing. You can't see God, but you know what He's doing because of His creation. Wow. So, how do the scientists know that dark energy and dark matter exist? Because they know that if there isn't more mass and energy somewhere in the universe, that everything would explode and fly apart. Because you need gravity to hold atoms together. So they're going, well, everything we measure, 75% of the universe is missing. Where is it? So Paul is using this argument that we are without excuse because nature itself tells us that there's a God. Pretty powerful stuff 2,000 years ago. He goes on, verse 21. For although they knew God, they neither glorified Him. See, he just says, you know God exists. Even atheists know God exists. They neither glorified Him as God nor gave Him thanks, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. So man's heart gets darkened. His thinking gets fuzzy. It's characterized by dark thinking. Futile thinking. What does futile mean? It's vain, it's foolish, it's empty. Do you ever feel like this before you were a disciple? Why am I here? What is this life for? I mean, I was in a place in my life where I had gotten to everything I wanted in my life and said, I'm empty. I don't feel peace in my life. I had a full scholarship to an awesome university. I was empty. And I started praying and saying, God, tell me what you want me to do with my life. What's the direction you want for me? You know? And I started struggling in school and getting grades that I wasn't used to getting. And I called my mother up and I said, things aren't going great for me. I don't know what to do. And my mom says, God has a plan for you. Just trust Him. And that, a few months later, I became a Christian. So, this mystery that I felt in my life, this shrouded mystery, like, what am I here for? What's God's plan? What am I supposed to do with my life? And I decided, I'm going to go on a fast until God tells me. And I fasted one day. Mind you, I wasn't a Christian. And I fasted 2 days. And I fasted 3 days. And I was on my fourth day. And Christopher Adumayunaigam says, hey, Pedro, would you like to come to a Bible talk? I said, yes. I'm very interested in coming to a Bible talk. And 6 weeks later, I was baptized into Christ. So what is this shrouded mystery? It's what happens when you live without the fruits of the Spirit in your life. It's that emptiness, that loneliness, that lostness. That causes you to start having that fuzzy thinking that keeps your life out of balance, that makes you do things that out of desperation you're trying to figure out, this is confusing, life must be something important about this life. I'm supposed to have joy and like Thoreau said, you know, every man's responsibility is to figure out what happiness is in their life. So I was on my journey and I found that living for myself didn't work. It's only when I found living by the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness.
Could you? 5:22.
I think I made the previous question.
No. Romans 1:21-24 is what we just finished reading. What I'm saying now is that this empty, vain, foolish lifestyle that Paul talks about is the opposite of Galatians 5:22. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. Okay. John, thank you for giving me the signal. Let's go on. Let's look at the philosophies at a time that were foolish and vain. So the Epicureans was a major philosophy at the time. That philosophy basically says that pleasure is the only intrinsic good. But it wasn't like hedonism like we think of it, but it was basically the absence of pain is the greatest pleasure. So they advocated a simple life. Another philosophy, the Stoics. They believed that destructive emotions could lead you to making poor choices, and that a sage of moral and intellectual perfection would not suffer such emotions. And so you would find peace and tranquility. And then the Gnostics, that comes from the word gnosis, which means knowledge, was an ancient religious teaching that basically taught that there were these great spiritual minds that could lead you to God. And they had this secret knowledge that if you just hung out with them and became their disciples, you can attain this great oneness with God. And they actually preached, a lot of them preached poverty, abstinence from sex, and search for wisdom. These were some of the philosophies that were floating around in Rome at the time. And in the spiritual marketplace of philosophies and religions, Christianity was one of them. And we'll talk about how Paul taught and what was going on in the church in the room after our break. So let's go ahead and take a 5-minute break.
Please sign up if you haven't yet. Also, my fault, we ran out of Romans books. How many would like a copy of Romans the Hard Step 3? We'll have it next week. All right, so we'll get about 10 copies or so. So we'll have it next week. My apologies, it was miscommunication with our publisher. All right, so we got to stop the tape. It's the batteries. The batteries run out. So hopefully we lost only a few minutes.
So
it's run a different quarter.
So what kind of batteries are they?
A double A.
Oh, because I think I have double A's in the car.
Great. Yeah, if you can get them.
Yeah, I can get them.
Sure.
Yeah. So how do you think it's going?
Fine. Going great.
Great.